How's it going?
Good, good. All right, so thanks for joining me, taking the time today, Corbin. We're going to talk about some interesting stuff. We started a few discussions a few weeks ago about bedside ultrasound assessment tools of pulmonary vascular resistance.
Yes.
I think that's interesting stuff. For anyone who hasn't heard of Corbin yet, Corbin's this unbelievable ER doc who does more in the ER than is done in most ICUs in terms of hemodynamic assessment, follow-up, intervention, et cetera, et cetera. And especially does a lot of work using Doppler both on the renal and venous side of things, arterial side of things, and now going to join us today to talk a little bit about how you can use bedside ultrasound and Doppler to interrogate the right side of the circulation and see how we can maybe clinically use that.
Yeah.
So what are you looking at and how do you use it will be the two main questions, I think, for today.
Yeah, so I guess, you know, when you are looking at a sick patient or a shocked patient and you kind of do an echo on them, you can pretty rapidly figure out if it's a right ventricle or a left ventricle problem. So we're going to focus on the right ventricular problems and leave the left ones alone for the most part here.
Right. So what you're basically saying is if you've got someone and you've seen that they have a big RV, probably a decreased TAPSE, the tricuspid movement, then you're pointing more towards a predominant right-sided failure. Is that right?
That's right, yep. And I think everybody probably understands that the left ventricle and the right ventricle are kind of different types of pumps, whereas the left ventricles like can deal with high afterloads and deals well with those. The right ventricle is more of kind of a pump that pumps well against low afterloads. I mean, I think the vascular resistance is like one-fifth in the pulmonary circuit than it is in the systemic circuit. So when a right ventricle comes up against a high pressure, it rapidly fails. It deals more well with volume loads than pressure overloads. So that will show you a failing right ventricle. And it's usually pretty easy to measure pulmonary artery pressures.
Right.
The most common, you know, way is to look at the tricuspid regurgitant jet. And I think it's kind of one formula people should kind of understand is that the modified Bernoulli or simplified Bernoulli principle, which is velocities across, valves tell you something about the pressure differentials behind them. So essentially, in most cases, if you square that velocity and multiply it by 4, that's the pressure gradient. So if you don't have, pulmonary stenosis or something like that, and you measure the pressure gradient across the tricuspid valve, then add the right atrial pressure, that is your pulmonary artery systolic pressure.
Right.
So, when you see a right ventricle that's in trouble and you note that there is pulmonary hypertension there from looking at that tricuspid jet, the other way is, sorry, I should mention, you can look at the acceleration time of the Doppler profile of the outflow tracts in the right ventricle, but we'll put some formulas in there on how to do that, maybe in the show notes.
Okay. But when you're saying at the acceleration time, you're talking about the time that it hits its peak velocity?
Yeah, so imagine a velocity time integral which is basically essentially the distance it travels over a stroke volume, but they have it has kind of a V shape with rounded edges, so part parabolic, part V shaped,
right.
And usually the peak velocity, the tip of the V is shifted a little to the left. So that time from the onset of ejection to the peak of the velocity, that time there will get shorter and shorter and shorter as the pulmonary artery pressure gets higher.
And that's presumably because the pulmonary vascular compliance is low, so that pressure shoots up right away.
Well, it could be because of two things. It could be that just the left atrial pressures are so high, it's backing up, or it could be that the pulmonary circuit itself has high resistance. So that brings us to the next point: is whenever you see a failing right ventricle and a high pulmonary artery pressure, your first question should be, why does this patient have pulmonary hypertension? And broadly, you can separate that into two categories. The one, which is going to be the most common one, is that you have high left atrial pressures. In other words, this is a left ventricle problem or a left-sided problem. So it could be the valves, it could be systolic heart failure, it could be diastolic heart failure of the left ventricle. But what's happening is those high pressures are backing up and causing a high pulmonary artery pressure. And there's ways to find that. I mean, that's where we're talking about EE ratios and things like that to see if the left atrial pressures are high, and that's a whole other issue. But in general, those pressures should be, like 12 millimeters mercury or less. And if they're higher than that, then it's the pulmonary artery pressure, at least in part, is because of the, something wrong on the left ventricular side of things.
Right.
But you can notice some things if the other side is besides the left atrial pressure is it could be a pulmonary vascular resistance issue causing your pulmonary hypertension. So that's your two big categories: left ventricular problem and pulmonary vascular resistance elevation causing pulmonary hypertension.
Right. How do we differentiate between both?
Okay, so the one is you can look at, in most cases, the EE ratio works pretty well. If that ratio is, less than, 8 or 10 or something like that, it's probably normal left atrial pressures. And there's a number of ways that you can detect pulmonary vascular resistance being elevated. One that's probably not so accurate, but you can still do it, is you can look at the pulmonary valve regurgitant jet, and you'll get kind of a trapezoidal sort of Doppler pattern. And if that end diastolic, pressure gradient is more than, say, 6 of what you are estimating your left atrial pressure to be, that implies that a lot of that extra pressure is due to pulmonary vascular resistance. And, you can think about what happens when you put in a right heart cath and you blow up that balloon. The relationship is, the resistance is equal to the wedge pressure, the difference between the wedge pressure and the mean pulmonary pressure divided by the cardiac output.
Right.
So if that end diastolic pressure is a lot less than the end diastolic pressure, some of that flow is from the resistance, right?
Resistance, yeah, the system.
Does that make sense?
Yep, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so if the normal, I think, is like maybe 6 millimeters or so, you can do that, but it's the more reliable really way to do this is to kind of screen for it by just simply taking the tricuspid regurgitant velocity in meters per second and dividing it by the envelope of the right ventricular outflow tract. And so that actually is probably the best screening tool. It's extremely accurate in finding elevations in pulmonary vascular resistance. And the reason why it works is because the tricuspid regurgitant jet velocity is telling you something about the pressure gradient, and the velocity time interval is telling you something about flow. So pressure divided by flow is resistance, essentially.
Right. So basically, if I'm going to understand this as an almost layman here in this discussion, the velocity of my tricuspid regurgitant jet is going to be dependent on that, whether it's left or inherent in the vascular resistance, the speed at which the pressure rises in my RV systole. Do I have that?
Yeah. What that's telling you is if the formula is resistance is basically pressure gradient over flow, that pressure gradient is telling you something about the pulmonary artery pressure gradient between the mean pulmonary artery pressure and the wedge pressure.
And the what pressure?
And so the pulmonary capillary wedge pressure.
Wedge, yeah, okay.
Okay. And then the velocity time interval that you're dividing that by is telling you something about the cardiac output.
Got it.
So it's a surrogate for cardiac output.
Got it.
So okay. If you have a high ratio there, you have a high resistance.
So how do you, on a practical level there, I'm at the bedside with my phased array probe, and I've got my tricuspid regurg envelope measured. What do I do from there?
Okay, so you notice that the patient has pulmonary hypertension.
Yeah.
So you want to know if this is because of high pulmonary vascular resistance or because of high left atrial pressures. So the next step is to look at the right ventricular outflow tract, and you can do that from various angles or whatever, different views with the echo probe,
right,
and get a velocity time integral.
Okay.
And you just trace the envelope of that, and you divide say you were at 3 meters per second. And
right.
So you would just divide 3 by whatever the envelope is, say 12 or something like that.
Okay.
And that's going to give you a number. And if you multiply that number just simply by 10, you're going to, if you just like to deal in decimals. But the
right
number, when you multiply it by 10, if it's more than 2, you have a probably very high likelihood of there being elevated pulmonary vascular resistance.
Got
and
it.
If it's less than 2, you don't really probably worry about that, and it's probably group 2 pulmonary hypertension. In other words, something wrong with the left ventricle.
Right.
That, too, we should mention, if you read the literature, they're talking about something called Wood unit.
Right.
And basically that is, when most people are talking resistance, they deal in dying seconds over centimeters to the fifth power.
Right.
And that's what kind of we're used to talking about. So, a normal pulmonary vascular resistance is around less than 150 or so. And if you, just divide 160 by 2, you're right there at, I'm sorry, at by 80, you're right there at 2. So the formula, everyone knows that kind of famous flow pressure resistance formula in physiology. So, that's kind of how you would kind of use a screening test for pulmonary vascular, elevated pulmonary vascular resistance. If you wanted to really kind of get a more accurate objective evaluation, that's, we could talk about that too, but it has to kind of do with how high it is, what kind of formula you're gonna use to figure out what how high that pulmonary vascular resistance is and what the neighborhood is of the value.
Right. Okay. That's good. That's going to be something to work on for the next few months. And in terms of clinical application in your case, do you kind of take a peek at this whenever you see as soon as you see any kind of RV dysfunction? We talk a lot about RV dysfunction and venous congestion and stuff like that. So if you do see RV congestion, you go ahead and take a look at this ratio?
Yeah, that's kind of the next step I take, is that if my ratio is over 2, then I'm going to actually kind of move on to some a little bit different formula. What they found was that this thing I just kind of was talking about was from a study way back in 2003, and the patient population it was derived from all didn't have that bad of increases in their pulmonary vascular resistance.
Right.
And so, in fact, none of them had Woods units more than 6, and most of them were in the range of around 3. So kind of, mild to moderate.
Yeah, what kind of PVPs would that correspond to?
Well, the pulmonary artery pressures were all kind of different in the patients. I don't recall the exact numbers, but most of them were around 50 millimeters of mercury or so. So kind of, you know, mild, moderate pulmonary hypertension.
Right.
And what kind of people found when they were playing around with this was that this formula works well if you are dealing with Wood's units less than 3 or less than 240, you know, dying seconds, centimeters, you know, square or so. So, but when you get up past there, especially up to like around 5 or 6 range, it kind of falls apart.
Okay.
And so the same group kind of a few years later, you know, looked at it and said, well, what's probably going on is that the formula is really for pulmonary artery pressure, you know, 4 times that velocity squared. So, you know, maybe if we just use the velocity squared and divide it by the velocity time integral, it would work out better to find an accurate pulmonary vascular resistance if it was at a higher value. And they actually derived a formula that actually came out to be most accurate when you multiplied that tricuspid regurgitant velocity, if you squared it and then multiplied it by 5 and then divided by the VTI, which is essentially the same formula as for your, you know, if you look at the TR squared times the times 4, that's your pulmonary systolic artery pressure. Pulmonary artery pressure. So that was looked at by another group, and sure enough, if your Wood units were high, more than 3, it's better just to use your pulmonary artery systolic pressure divided by your VTI to find out what the pulmonary vascular resistance is.
And does that hold, like, in more regular values? Like, why do we not just use that one throughout?
Well, the problem is that that formula doesn't work as well when you're
below
when your PVR is below 3. Yeah, right.
Okay.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
And what the second group also looked at and found was that if they had a certain pattern on the right ventricular outflow tract velocity time integral of a notching pattern, the formula worked best if you just added 3, if there was a notch, to the systolic pulmonary artery pressure divided by the VTI plus 3, if a notch. If no notch, just don't add the 3.
And what's the physiology behind that notch?
Yeah, so it's really interesting. The morphology of the right ventricular outflow tract tells you a lot about both the right ventricle and pulmonary circuit coupling. Tells you about the pulmonary artery hemodynamics, and it tells you about the RV performance depending on what part of that velocity time integral you're looking at. So imagine a normal velocity time integral that we talked about with kind of a rounded V with the V kind of shifted towards the left. Well, somewhere along that past that V point, as the velocities get lower and lower and lower, people with very high pulmonary vascular resistance will have a bump. And there's kind of a transition from that deceleration line to a inflection point where the deceleration gets slower. And then that will transition as the pulmonary vascular resistance gets higher into an actual notch. And it turns out that first part of that kind of double-pointed W with a very deep W point and a not so deep W point.
Yeah, yeah.
So that first part with the deceleration and all that tells you about the pulmonary artery, you know, pressures, a lot about the pulmonary vascular resistance, because as the resistance gets higher and higher and higher, that deceleration time gets lower and lower and lower, because the it's harder for the right ventricle to kind of push, so it shortens the ejection time.
Okay.
And then that notch actually is a indication of the compliance of the pulmonary artery circuit being very low. Because what happens is the right ventricle will eject, and it sends out a pressure wave into the pulmonary artery circuit. And at some point, they send back a pressure wave back as they hit their, you know, the stretch point.
Right.
And that pressure wave comes back, and if the resistance or the compliance is lower, that wave will come back faster. And so in a normal person, that wave comes back so slow that the RV is already finished ejecting before it sees that wave come at it. So you get no indication of it on your velocity time interval tracing. But if the compliance is very low from high pulmonary vascular resistance, that reflected wave comes back very quickly and it interrupts this flow.
The upstroke. The flow. Yeah.
It gives you that little notch. And
yeah.
How high the peak of that second little notch is tells you actually how good the right ventricle is at overcoming that pressure wave. So therefore, that implies how strong your right ventricle is actually performing. That will be related to like your TAPC or your TAPV if you're into the tissue Doppler, or tie index if you want to, you know, go that far, whatever, fractional, you know, area of contraction. But that second part tells you more about not the pulmonary vascular resistance, but the right ventricle performance.
Okay. All right, we'll have to put up a little graph about that. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
'Cause I remember the first few times of looking at that RVOT, waveform, it's like, whoa, this is, it's not like, you know, your nice TR or aortic or something like that. They're like, this is a very messy image here.
Right, yeah. And for kind of like echo history buff, the old, like a flying W on M mode is actually a reflection of that notch.
Oh.
Because the valve flutters with the pressure wave.
Very neat. All right, well, this is a lot of interesting stuff to digest, and I'll be looking to think about how can we integrate this in our various algorithm of, I mean, I think this is the advanced sort of POCUS hemodynamics stuff, and probably, again, just another one of those pieces of physiologic data that you're going to integrate into your whole picture and take it from there.
Right, exactly. If you see, you know, you might use this clinically if you have a RV that's, you know, maybe not performing so well, but that you notice the notch, you may want to treat the pulmonary vascular resistance, for example.
Gotcha. Yes. That's an interesting one. Yeah, because that'll be, I think, the interesting thing about these things is where do you fit them into your algorithms and or decisional points. You know, it's always good to know, but obviously
right.
It's even better if you can actually do something to improve those. Your parameters and your cardiopulmonary performance.
Yes.
All right. Well, listen, thanks a lot for taking the time.
Yep,
we will
no
put
problem.
Up some of these links and articles and try to put a couple of graphs to illustrate this and some live echo shots. All right.
Okay, great.
Thanks again.
All right, thanks.
Yeah.